You are about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land of imagination. Next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Kids play in a city street. An organ grinder with a monkey. In an apartment overlooking the street, a man drinks a cup of coffee, looks at his watch, runs across the cluttered room and stuffs something in his pocket. Quickly combs his hair, runs across the room and grabs his plaid jacket, puts it on while still holding on to his cup and saucer.
In the parlance of the 20th century, this is an oddball. His name is James B.W. Beavis, and his tastes lean toward stuffed animals, zither music, professional football, Charles Dickens, moose heads, carnivals, dogs, children, and young ladies. Mr. Beavis is accident-prone, a little vague, a little discombobulated, with a life that possesses all the security of a floating crap game. But this can be said of our Mr. Beavis. Without him, without his warmth, without his kindness, the world would be a considerably poorer place, albeit perhaps a little saner.
He rushes out the door, then runs back in to put his cup and saucer down, then back out again. Trots down the stairs, picks up a dog off the stairs, continues to the next flight of stairs.
Hi, Michelle.
Good morning, Mr. Beavis.
Examines the banister.
Why not, Mr. Beavis?
Why not?
Puts the dog down.
Okay.
And slides down the banister. Tumbles down from the bottom. Then tumbles down the outside steps down to the sidewalk. Smiles at the young boy. Picks himself up. As a dour woman with a broom stands next to the boy and glares at Beavis. Beavis joins in the kids' football game in progress in the street, throws a pass, greets a fruit vendor, who tosses him an apple.
Thanks, Tony.
Should it not be obvious by now, James B.W. Beavis is a fixture in his own private, optimistic, hopeful little world. A world which has long ceased being surprised by him.
He takes a parking ticket off his antique jalopy. As he gets in the car, a half dozen kids rush up to help push start it.
James B.W. Beavis, on whom Dame Fortune will shortly turn her back. But not before she gives him a paste in the mouth. Mr. James B.W. Beavis, just one block away from the Twilight Zone.
In an office. Rows of desks occupied by busy men and women, except for one unoccupied and more cluttered desk. The boss stands with his hands on his hips and scowls at the unoccupied desk. He walks over, looks at the stuffed animals and whatnot.
Will you please tell the gentleman who occupies this museum and livestock exhibit I should like to see him when he finally deigns to report for work?
A clock figurine moves its eyes rhythmically up and down. The boss shakes his head and walks out. From the opposite door, Beavis enters.
Hi, girl. Hi, Bernie. Hi, Maud. Harry. Hi, Margaret.
Mr. Beavis, Mr. Peckinpah wants to see you.
Thanks.
Beavis gets up and heads toward the door, looks back into the office, then goes out toward Peckinpah's office. The other employees stop and lean towards the door to listen.
I'll be brief, Beavis. You keep a ledger like an ape. Your desk is an affront to any concept of orderly symmetry. Your eccentricities are beyond any kind of understanding. You're bringing phonograph records of zither music to play during the afternoon. You're hiring Christmas carolers to come in and serenade the office during our busiest hour.
Beavis returns to the office. The other workers look up from their desks. As he sits down at his desk, a man brings over a large cardboard box.
Thanks.
The sack, Mr. Beavis?
The sack. This is the sixth job I've lost this year, Margaret. Well, the best laid plans of mice and men. And Beavis.
I'll help you pack, Mr. Beavis.
I was building this for one of the kids. It's old Ironsides, the Constitution. Well, she won't get launched today, that's for sure.
Old Ironsides will get launched. You'll get another job, Mr. Beavis. You always have.
The only job I've ever held for more than 6 months was during the Second World War when I was in the Navy. Here.
Holding up a photo.
This is me next to the fantail.
Oh, he's fat, isn't he?
That's the bosun's mate. This is the fantail.
Outside, Beavis carries the large box out, walks toward the curb, just as a white car backs into his car, locks bumpers, and tows his car away. The white car turns right, but Beavis's car keeps rolling straight ahead and crashes. He runs over to the crash scene, finds his car lying on its side. Police officer taps his shoulder and points at the car.
Yours?
Beavis nods his head.
Does it do this often?
Well, it never has before. It's always been kind of like an old friend to me. Well, I'll phone for the tow truck.
Do that.
Beavis walks off, but then turns back toward the officer.
Officer, you wouldn't be interested in purchasing a Rickenbacker, would you? It's a late 24.
No, thanks. I kind of got my eye on a 27 Maxwell, but I'm going to wait until the new models come out because that way I can get a better deal.
Officer, did you ever have one of those days?
Not like this.
Beavis walks home.
Hi, boy.
Still carrying the large cardboard box. Goes up the outside stairs, where a box lies on the stoop. Beavis stops to look at his stuff. Inside, he goes up the stairs and passes the dour woman.
Hello, Miss Chapman.
Carrying another cardboard box down.
That's right, Beavis. You're being evicted. 6 weeks in arrears on your rent, and that's it, as far as I'm concerned.
In a bar. Beavis downs his fifth drink and grimaces.
You said you wanted something to fortify a man in the darkest hour of his life. Are them it?
Those are it. You can't use them in the nominative case.
Live and learn, huh?
Yeah, live and learn.
In the mirror, Beavis sees two men in business suits sitting at a table further down the bar. They wave at him. Beavis turns away from the mirror and looks at the table, but it is empty. In the mirror, the two men are still there.
Bartender.
You all right, bud?
Would you kindly tell me what are the ingredients of this drink?
Well, you said you wanted to get fortified, pal. I put everything in there but atomic energy.
Does that explain why I can see him in the mirror, but I can't see him in the booth?
See who?
Whom? Objective case.
Quite right, Mr. Beavis. Whom? Objective case.
Says the man in the mirror. Beavis gets up and walks over to the booth. He sits down and waves his arms at the empty space where the men were seated in the mirror's image.
Well, Mr. Beavis, we meet at last, eh?
The man pops into view on the seat.
That's very nice. And who might you be?
Whom? Objective case. The name, for purposes of identification, is J. Hardy Hempstead. I'm your guardian angel.
Beavis raises his eyebrows. The bartender brings a drink over to the table. Beavis points at the now empty seat across the table from him.
This is my friend, Mr. J. Hardy Hempstead. See what he's having.
Him?
The bartender picks up the empty glass.
And a happy Thanksgiving to you.
Hempstead reappears.
Well, cheers, Mr. Hempstead, and to better days. Oh, aren't you drinking?
A drink materializes in Hempstead's hand. They both drink up.
Now then, you were saying you were my... What was it?
Your guardian angel. Mr. Beavis, here's the way the cookie crumbles. Several hundred years ago, one of your ancestors performed an act of great courage. Now, part of his reward was to have a guardian angel assigned to one of his descendants in each generation. Current subject, James B.W. Beavis. That's you. Mr. Beavis, in the past few generations, I've handled some extremely solid citizens among your progenitors. For instance...
The picture on the wall changes.
Magellan Beavis. An intrepid explorer of the 16th century.
Changes again.
Parnell Beavis. A member of the British Parliament who fought for home rule against insurmountable odds. And more recently...
And again.
Gunner Lou Beavis. The first Marine to hit the beach in Nicaragua.
That's Uncle Louie. I tell you what, look, I'll close my eyes real tight, and then you disappear, and then go away and hunt somebody else.
Mr. Beavis, I am not a figment of your imagination. As of now, you are being watched over by the same guardian angel, J. Hardy Hempstead, your obedient servant.
Watched over?
Watched over. Assisted by minor miracles from time to time, given small heavenly aids when the situation calls for them.
Hempstead looks up at the ceiling, where a lighting fixture comes loose, but at his command, reverses its fall.
Getting it, Mr. Beavis? Watched over.
Hempstead gulps down another drink.
Now, today you had a very uncomfortable time. You were fired from what was your 11th job in 18 months.
Well, Mr. Peckinpah didn't like zither music.
Well, I can't say I blame him for that, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, I can reconstitute the whole day, Mr. Beavis, so that its final upshot will be exactly opposite to what it was. So let's go back to this morning and start all over again, hmm?
You mean I can have the day to live over again and it won't be the way it was?
Definitely not. We change some aspects. Inevitably, we naturally have to change certain characteristics of your own. Your clothes, for instance, Mr. Beavis...
Beavis looks down and frowns.
Are you serious?
The plaid suit and striped bow tie are now solid black.
I look like an undertaker.
That may well be. But if you want the day to end differently, you're going to have to be a little bit different yourself, Mr. Beavis. Let's go. There isn't much time.
Well, I certainly want to thank you for taking all this trouble with me, Mr. Hempstead, whoever you are.
The bartender looks quizzically at Beavis's arm outstretched towards nothing. Hempstead walks out through a glass door. Beavis follows him and bangs his face on the glass. In the apartment building, Beavis comes down the stairs, picks up the dog, puts it back down.
Hi, Michelle.
Good morning.
Goes to the next flight. Examines the banister.
That nonsense is for the old Beavis. You are the new Beavis.
Beavis walks down. But Hempstead considers the banister.
Coming, Mr. Hempstead?
Oh, yes. I'm coming, Mr. Beavis.
Down the exterior stairs to the sidewalk. Turns toward the woman with the broom.
Mrs. Chatfield.
Good morning there, Mr. Beavis.
Look, about the rent.
Oh, I found it in the box. 3 weeks in advance. You're a wonderful, wonderful roomer, Mr. Beavis.
Okay there, boys. Let's go. No, I'm ready.
The kids playing in the street ignore him.
Right there.
To the fruit vendor.
Hey, Tony! How are you, Johnny?
Well, where's my apple?
For free. I give nobody nothing. Bananas! Bananas!
He rolls his pushcart away.
Bananas!
Beavis walks slowly down the sidewalk and looks back and forth.
What are you looking for, Mr. Beavis?
My car, my Rickenbacker.
Correction. You don't drive a Rickenbacker. That's your car.
Pointing across the street at a sports car.
That little thing? Well, gee, do you think it fits?
Mr. Beavis, live it up, will you?
But have you ever driven a 1924 Rickenbacker?
My dear Beavis, I've driven a chariot with 11 horses. I'm the guy responsible for Ben-Hur winning. And the old Rickenbacker went out with the old Beavis. You're a different person now. No more bow ties, no more zither music, no more Christmas carolers in the office. Though the latter idiosyncrasy met with some approval from the organization. Shall we, Mr. Beavis?
Taking the passenger seat. Beavis walks around, hesitates, takes the driver's seat, starts to back up, then slams on the brakes.
Sorry, pal.
You'll get on to it.
At the office, the clock reads 8:58. Beavis stands in the doorway and surveys the room.
Look, somebody cleared off my desk.
Nothing of the kind. You'll see.
Hempstead disappears.
Morning. Morning. Maud. Morning. Morning. Hi, Margaret.
Good morning, Mr. Beavis.
Hey, what happened to the clock I won at the carnival? Where's the ship I was building?
What ship? I don't know what you're talking about.
Peckinpah enters.
Ah! Good morning, Beavis. Associates, one moment. I want you all to share this bit of good news. As of this moment, Mr. James B.W. Beavis has been given a raise in salary. $10 a week, starting from this very moment. And I might add that your work has been admirable. Since you've been here for 11 months, I think it's time you got a raise.
A raise, Mr. Peckinpah?
Quite right, Beavis, quite right.
Peckinpah turns and walks off.
Well, Mr. Peckinpah.
Yes, Beavis?
Well, but Mr. Peckinpah, what about the zither music? What about the Christmas carols?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mr. Beavis, you no longer have an interest in zither music or Christmas carolers or any of that nonsense.
Oh.
Oh, what, Beavis?
Nothing, sir. Nothing, Mr. Peckinpah.
Oh.
It looks nude.
Looking at his clean desk.
It doesn't look decent. I'm going to go out and get a little air.
Beavis walks out of the office. In the corridor, Hempstead stands by the windows.
I got a raise.
Things are really looking up for you, aren't they, Mr. Beavis?
Yeah, I guess they are.
Pressing the elevator button.
Where are you going?
Oh, I'm going to go out and get a little air. Or I may go over to my place and play a little football with the kids in the street.
Mr. Beavis.
Yeah?
They won't play with you. Not anymore. You're not the same Beavis.
I see.
The doors close, but Hempstead appears in the elevator, and the doors reopen.
Beavis, what do you say we level, hmm? Now, what is it that you really want? You know, for a fella like you, a $10 raise is the most that even I can get for you. To use the vernacular, Beavis, frankly, I don't dig you. I'm used to Beavises with big dreams, gigantic hopes, fantastic aspirations. Magellan Beavis sailing around the Horn. Parnell Beavis standing alone in Parliament, thundering out his convictions. Gunnerloo Beavis. Semper Fidelis. Over the top, boys. Nobody lives forever. Let's go.
Look, Mr. Hempstead, I don't like to appear ungracious, but, well, the things I like, the things I believe in, I know they're odd, but they are worth considerably more than $10 a week.
So I'm to take it that you prefer the bow tie and old Ironsides, hmm?
I'm afraid that seems to be the case.
Now, you realize it's going to be exactly the way it was. No job, no car, no place to live at the moment.
Well, it's been that way before.
Smiling.
It's complicated, is it?
Hardly.
The clothes change back. Beavis runs over to the windows.
Take a good look. Won't be around very long. The cars will hook bumpers just as it was ordained they should hook bumpers.
The white car again backs into his. Beavis goes over and looks into the office, where his desk is again covered with an assortment of whimsical items.
Gotta get it over with. Here comes Peckinpah. This time he won't be talking about a raise.
It doesn't make a bit of difference. Not a bit of difference.
Would you kindly tell the gentleman who occupies this museum and livestock exhibit that I should like to see him when he finally deigns to report for work?
Beavis goes in.
Hi, girls. Hi, Bernie. Hi, Maud.
Morning.
Harry.
Hi.
Hi, Margaret.
Mr. Beavis, Mr. Peckinpah wants to see you.
Back in the bar, Beavis downs his fifth glass.
You feel fortified now, pal?
I certainly do. You know, I lost my job today, and my car, and I was evicted. But you know what? I love zither music and model shipbuilding, and if you can't bring kids into an office at Christmas time to sing carols, then what's the point of being alive?
Beats me.
Well, there is no point. No point at all! Well, now I'm going to go out and try and find myself another job. And I'm going to find myself an apartment. And then I'm going to start finishing old Ironsides for a little kid, 8 years old, with a dirty face who happens to love model shipbuilding just the same as I do.
$5, pal.
Beavis slaps a bill down on the counter and walks out. Outside, his car materializes, parked right next to a fire hydrant.
Still with me, Mr. Hempstead?
A parking officer comes by and starts to write a ticket.
Officer! Officer!
Your car, mister?
Well,
In this town, we take a dim view of parking in front of a hydrant.
The hydrant disappears and reappears at the next parking space. The officer goes over. Beavis walks around his car, flashes a big smile, and waves bye-bye to the officer.
Still with me, Mr. Hempstead?
Still with you, Mr. Beavis. Still with you.
Gets in and starts the car. The officer coughs from the exhaust as Beavis drives off.
Mr. James B.W. Beavis, who believes in a magic all his own. The magic of a child's smile. The magic of liking and being liked. The strange and wondrous mysticism that is a simple act of living. Mr. James B.W. Beavis, specie of 20th century male, who has his own private and special Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by William Asher. Written and narrated by Rod Serling. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Orson Bean, Henry Jones, with Charles Lane, Horace McMahon, William Shallert, and Florence McMichael, Dorothy Newman, Vito Scotti, House Peters Jr., Helene O'Sullivan, Timmy Cletro. Director of Photography, George T. Clemens. Production Manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art Directors, George W. Davis, Merrill Pye. Assistant Director, Don Clune. Film Editor, Bill Mosher. Set Decorations, Henry Grace, Keel Gleason. Sound, Frank Milton, Philip Mitchell. Copyright 1959 by Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio Description by Lou Lasher.